Today, we're going to do an overview of 1 and 2 Samuel by talking about how the book is structured and who wrote it. And we're going to push back against liberal scholars who dissect it into unrelated parts. To learn more, join me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic. First and Second Samuel were originally one unified scroll in the Hebrew Bible. But later, when the Hebrew was translated into the Greek Septuagint, it took up more space and could no longer fit on one scroll. So the translators of the Greek Septuagint split the book of Samuel into two parts. It wasn't until the 15th century AD that the Hebrew Bible followed suit and split the book into two parts. And of course, our English Bibles have it in two parts. Interestingly, by dividing the original book into two parts, we've ended up with a whole book, 2 Samuel, devoted to David. And I think this is appropriate since he was Israel's greatest king. In fact, more is written about David and by David in the Bible than any other person except Jesus. In addition to being in 1 and 2 Samuel, David appears constantly in the historical books. He wrote half of the Psalms, and he is mentioned by name in the first and last chapters of the New Testament, in Matthew chapter 1 and in Revelation chapter 22. So David is a very key figure in the Bible. The authorship of 1 and 2 Samuel is unknown, and a lack of evidence prevents us from having a definitive answer. But there are a number of theories, and the question of who wrote it goes hand in hand with the question of when. 1 Samuel opens somewhere around 1100 BC, and the final events at the end of 2 Samuel occurred around 971 BC. So the books span over a 100-year period. This means that the books couldn't have been written by just one person if they were written while the events were occurring. For example, some have wondered whether Samuel is the author. It's possible that he documented some events during his lifetime, and Jewish tradition does point to Samuel as the author of the early chapters. But he couldn't have recorded all of 1 and 2 Samuel, because his death is recorded in 1 Samuel chapter 25, verse 1, and chapter 28, verse 3. It's more likely that the books were named after the prophet because he played a key role during the transitional era from the judges to the monarchy. Chronicles 29:29 refers to the records of Samuel the seer, the records of Nathan the prophet, and the records of Gad the seer. This leads to the theory that the writer of Chronicles may have been referring to these three prophets as the main authors of 1 and 2 Samuel. If this is true, the threefold authorship could relate to three sections of the text with distinct emphases. First, the transition from judges to the monarchy, which would have involved Samuel. Second, David's rise to the throne, which would have involved Gad. And third, the succession narrative, or the court history of David's reign, which would have involved Nathan. It's possible that the key prophet in each of these time periods left behind records that the author of 1 and 2 Samuel was able to use later. They had probably accumulated important source materials on David. Now, the timing of the writing is important too. Some scholars believe that 1 and 2 Samuel was written shortly after the death of David, but others place the final composition hundreds of years later in the 6th century BC. Probably the most popular scholarly theory right now is that there was a historian during the period of Israel's exile, which is hundreds of years after David lived, who wrote 1 and 2 Samuel based on materials that were already in existence. But there are also strong arguments in favor of it having been written long before the exile. And some of the scholars who favor a late date argue for multiple authors who kind of hodgepodge the text together. As you can see, we don't know who wrote it or when, and there are many opinions and perspectives about this. Now, some books, such as the Psalms, were written by multiple authors and compiled some point at a later date. But for some books of the Bible, the hunt by scholars to find different ideological strands by different writers undermines the integrity of the book. And this is so for 1 and 2 Samuel. Some scholars view the organization as just a jumble of independent narratives, such as the Ark narrative and the Succession narrative, that were then strung together at a later time. But this approach is blind to the complexity of the vision of the extraordinary writer. There is coherence within the various stories. They're not just hodgepodge together. Personally, after studying all of the theories, my best guess is I think resources were composed during or soon after the events that occurred, possibly by the prophets. And then 1 and 2 Samuel was written by one author who lived sometime after David, but before the exile, and who used the existing documents and resources to help him compose the narrative. This means that we should recognize 1 and 2 Samuel as a whole and assess the structure in a way that demonstrates the overall integrity of the work. There is an interconnectedness of the structure and organization of 1 and 2 Samuel that shows organic unity. So let's take a few minutes and talk about that structure. As I mentioned previously, Jewish tradition ascribes authorship to the prophets Samuel, Gad, and Nathan. This would correlate to a simple three-part structure in which Samuel provided information for 1 Samuel chapters 1 through 14, with its emphasis on the transition from the judges to the monarchy. Gad provided information for 1 Samuel 15 through 2 Samuel 8, which covers David's rise to the throne. And Nathan provided information for 2 Samuel chapters 9 through 20 with the court history. We can also have a thematic outline with a few more categories. In this outline, the first section is 1 Samuel chapters 1 through 15, covering the transition from the period of the judges to the monarchy, or from a priest to a king. The second section is the rest of 1 Samuel, in which we see a stark contrast between Saul and David. Saul, the herder of mules, and David, the keeper of the sheep. Saul who drives, and David who leads. Saul who can't find his father's mules, and David who tends his father's flock, even at the risk of his own life. This is where we see the comparison of each of their characters. The third section covers the first 10 chapters of 2 Samuel with the rise of David and the restoration of Israel. David patiently awaits his time to be king, and then he experiences his prosperous years with military victories. Then chapters 11 and 12 can be identified as a pivotal point in David's story in which he doesn't go out to battle when he should have, and he commits adultery and murder in the Bathsheba affair. This leads to the next section, 2 Samuel chapters 13 through 20, in which David's kingdom unravels as a consequence of his sin. He has to deal with the lust of Amnon and the lawlessness of Absalom. Then the book concludes with a summary of the good and the bad with David and his kingdom. Now, these outlines walk us through the overarching storyline of 1 and 2 Samuel, but a key to the structure of the text that many people may not recognize is the boundaries of the narrative. These boundaries can be gleaned by examining the bookends of the text, the very beginning of 1 Samuel and the very end of 2 Samuel. 1 Samuel begins with the story of an unknown family that highlights the biblical theme of barrenness. The special child, Samuel, eventually arrives through God's intervention and becomes the key transitional figure from the period of the judges to the monarchy. In a sense, the monarchy began with this son of a woman whose womb Yahweh had closed. So the power of God is shown through one who was otherwise powerless. Chapter 2 begins with Hannah's song. Her song affirms key tenets of Israelite faith. God judges and oversees human destinies. He rewards those who earnestly seek him. He empowers those who fear him. And he authoritatively judges. The climax of the prayer is found in verse 10, in which Hannah prays, "The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken to pieces. Out of heaven shall he thunder upon them. The Lord shall judge the ends of the earth, and he shall give strength unto his king, and exalt the horn of his anointed." Now, minimalist scholars have denied attributing this poem to Hannah because of the mention of a king prior to the establishment of the monarchy in Israel. However, the hope of a king extended as far back as the Abrahamic covenant in Genesis 17:6, and the need for a king was expressed in the time of Judges, in the book of Judges chapters 8 and 9. Most importantly, Hannah's prayer prophetically prepares the reader for the future monarchy and introduces key themes that will be woven throughout the narrative of 1 and 2 Samuel, themes such as God is a deliverer. He is a God of knowledge who weighs deeds, and he chooses who he humbles and who he exalts. The wicked, the adversaries of the Lord, are those who pit their strength against him. His faithful ones and his anointed are, by contrast, those who keep the covenant and who rely not on their own strength, but on that of their God. So the idea of barrenness and the birth of the one who will transition Israel to a monarchy, followed by the prayer of Hannah that sets in motion key themes that resonate throughout 1 and 2 Samuel, shows that there is a powerful introduction to the books. The opposite bookend or boundary of the text consists of the final four chapters of 2 Samuel, which are basically a summary of David and his kingdom. These chapters offer a microcosm of David's career and character, and they are arranged in a chiastic ABC-CBA pattern. First is the famine, which is divine judgment on Saul's sin. This is followed by a list of David's warriors. Next is David's song of thanksgiving. Then, mirroring these three sections in reverse, is David's last words, a list of David's warriors, and a plague as divine punishment on David's sin. The beginning and ending narratives of the chiasm frame this section by featuring the divine judgments of Israel because of the sins of her first two kings, Saul and David. These accounts partially fulfill Samuel's warning to the Israelites that if they are bent on sinning, both they and their king will incur judgment from the Lord. The second tiers of the chiasm are the lists of David's warriors, which not only democratize the honor that is usually attributed to the kings only, but also show God's providence for these valiant warriors who helped David to build his kingdom. The middle or core of the chiasm consists of two Davidic poems which focus on the sovereignty and dependability of God, as well as Israelite royal ideology. David underscores a central theme that a king's success depends on an understanding of God's authority. 2 Samuel chapters 21 through 24 is sometimes viewed as an appendix, but the chiastic arrangement of these chapters shows that it's not just a collection of miscellaneous material tagged onto the end of a book as a supplement. These concluding chapters have been intentionally arranged to function as a theological reflection on Israel's kingship. And there are other chiasms within the body of these books that emphasize key components of the narrative. For example, 2 Samuel chapter 5, verse 17 through chapter 8, verse 14 is another chiasm, and it aligns with the chiasm that we just discussed in 2 Samuel chapters 21 through 24 by exploring similar themes related to David. Another structural technique found in 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel is that of mirroring of the textual segments. For example, the long rebellion story of 2 Samuel chapters 13 through 19 and the short rebellion story of 2 Samuel chapter 20 mirror the long rivalry story in 1 Samuel chapter 16 through 2 Samuel chapter 1 and the short rivalry story in 2 Samuel chapters 2 through 4. These structural techniques of the writer help the readers to connect what happens later in the narrative to what has already happened, and it shows careful thought by the writer. If we believe that these are different, separate narratives that were simply strung together, as some scholars would argue, then we lose the complex richness of the narrative. As another example, some believe that the story about Bathsheba and eventually the ascension of Solomon to the throne was a separate succession narrative that was compiled sometime at a later point with other pieces. But think about David's response to the death of his first son with Bathsheba. It is more poignant in light of his previous experiences. If we view this scene as part of an unrelated, independent succession narrative, simply collated with other independent stories, it undermines the integrity of the unified story that God wants to communicate to us. The narrative of 1 and 2 Samuel, which I just briefly touched on today, is rich and complex. The structural arrangement and the organization of the content have complex interconnections in the unfolding stages of the narrative. The overall structure of 1 and 2 Samuel shows thematic development within textual boundaries. There's a fluid continuity that exists from Hannah's song to the chiastic conclusion, demonstrating organic cohesion through the development of key themes. The narrative complexity and multiple chiasms indicate careful consistency by the writer. Both the structure and the organization show a sophisticated interconnectedness that is evidence of a divinely inspired unity. Thank you for joining me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic. And until next time, take care and God bless.